you. What is it that you're trying to tell me?
You'll find out. In any case, I'll be watching. And if you're very lucky, I'll drop by to say hello from time to time. See you out there.
Transfer complete.
And welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton on a voyage through the finale frontier.
And we're here this time to rank the series finales.
Yeah, Cam, I've been waiting to do this for a long, long time. We've been doing all these like reviews of the two-part episodes or feature-length episodes of Star Trek, and so we wanted to wait until we got to the very end, which of course was the final episode of Enterprise, until we sat back and kind of ranked all the finales. We also ranked the series premieres, because of course we were able to do that after reviewing Broken Bow. So this is going to be fun to actually kind of dive into what makes a good series finale and what makes, I don't know, a bad one or one that kind of leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
But
are you excited about this one?
Well, it's all gold right across the board, right?
There might be a little bit of debate between the two of us on that.
Maybe some fool's gold.
Thank you, Curly. Hope everybody got that reference.
There's no one that gets that reference.
Okay. I could have made a reference to that Kate Hudson, Matthew McConaughey movie as well, but I decided to go with Billy Crystal from the 1990s, what all the kids are into.
Yeah, good old 1994, the year of City Slickers 2.
Wonderful. Cam, look, I think the way we do it is let's kick it off. We'll count down from, I think, the number 5 down to number 1. If I may be so bold, maybe I'll start on this because this is one I debated. There's two contenders for my number 5 pick. And in one instance, we have an episode that I think just is a little bit nonsensical. It really doesn't work for me on just the premise alone. But the other episode, it's more, I would guess, say watchable, but to me, it kind of harms the legacy of a series that was otherwise just kind of like really getting into its groove. For me, number 5 has to be These Are the Voyages from Star Trek Enterprise. Where are you on this one? Is this amongst your favorites, or am I kind of on the right track with you that maybe you didn't like this one so much either?
Spoiler for my number 1 favorite.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, this was my number 5 as well. I went back and forth between this one and number 4. I kind of fell in the same boat as you, where like I had to acknowledge like, this one actively hurts Enterprise to the point where, you know, I just did a rewatch of Enterprise not too long ago. And I was dreading getting to this episode because I knew that the momentum of, you know, going through that series, especially when you get to seasons 3 and 4 and the show is really soaring, you know, you're going to crash back down to Earth and it's going to be ugly and there's going to be wreckage that's burning.
Wow. It's going to be like the Enterprise in the atmosphere of the Genesis planet.
Exactly. Yes, or even the Enterprise in Generations.
Or the Enterprise in Star Trek Beyond.
The Enterprise just keeps on crashing. Or we could say the Voyager in Timeless.
Oh, wow, okay.
That's all right. Either way, they're ugly in every case, and this is ugly as well.
Well, for me, this is where I come down on this. It turns essentially the final episode of the NX-01 crew into kind of a side quill adventure for one Commander Riker. Mm-hmm. He's on the holodeck the entire time so that Riker can learn a lesson. And it really feels as if our main characters that we've been following for 4 years, that we've been invested in, they really do have to play second fiddle for some fan service that's going on in just a bizarre story that's not actually all that interesting or compelling to even watch.
Like, this should be the most momentous, like, final mission of the NX-01 over its, like, 5-year mission.
This I don't know what finale. You're talking about, Cam.
Like, Shran trading a diamond for his daughter is not that interesting. I mean, this is wrapping up the 5-year journey of the NX-01. Look, there's not going to be any movies. There's not going to be any, at this point, CBS All Access shows in the future that could potentially carry this forward. As far as anyone attached to this show knows, this is the end of Enterprise. And yet, this is what they chose to do as, like, the final mission? It's so strange and trivial.
I think we discussed it on our review a couple months ago of the episode, but we just kept asking ourselves, like, what are the stakes, like, of this particular episode? And it's whether or not Shran, who has apparently fallen in with the wrong crowd in between the 5 years that take place between Demons and Terra Prime, and these are the voyages, he's involved with space pirates, he's stolen a diamond, his daughter that we've never met before is kidnapped. It seems so jumbled, and it feels as if they had like kind of a Yahtzee set. They shook everything up in there, and then they pulled out all the cubes or whatever. I've never played Yahtzee in my life, so
I can tell.
and they just pulled out like little kind of like verbs and nouns and placed everything together and said, well, I guess this is what happens.
Yeah, I mean, why not just make the final story Precious Cargo? Like, that's how trivial it is. Like, it's such a, like, weak episode, even on its own, that you're like, really? Like, this isn't even a good Enterprise story. And Enterprise, by this point in time, has plenty of good stories. So to put this one right next to that Demons Terra Prime two-parter is just, like, extra embarrassing. If Enterprise had gone off the air at the end of, I don't know, season 2, maybe this would be less offensive, but coming at the end of season 4, it's pretty bad.
Well, what do you think about, you know, Terra Prime and Demons as a proper finale versus These Are the Voyages? Because when we did our review, we actually called our episode Wrapping Up Enterprise. We actually combined all three of those episodes into like kind of a holistic review there. But maybe reiterate for the listeners once again what, you know, you felt about that.
Well, the thing is, that's the last time, the Demons Terra Prime two-parter is the last time we see those characters in the flesh actually having an adventure. You know, when we get to These Are the Voyages, that's Riker on a holodeck program during the Pegasus for some reason. I really feel we were robbed, by the way, of a, like, Admiral Pressman, like, poking his head in and being like, hurry up, Riker.
That would have been amazing.
No. Especially if that's how they'd ended the episode, of him poking in his head and then Riker walking out with him down a hallway.
In a headlock. It's like no, but you're right. I mean it felt as if this is the Riker story, and our characters that we've been following for 4 seasons, they're playing second fiddle to a fan favorite, all in a bid to, I think what they were trying to do, and this is what Braun and Braga has said before though, is wrap up 18 years of the Berman era, which I understand the compulsion and the sense of obligation to do such a thing.
Yeah.
But it just does such a disservice to these characters on board the NX-01.
It really does. And it's not even a good Riker story. Like, the thing is, if they want to wrap up the Berman era with this one episode and kind of have it a little bit removed from Enterprise, it's not even a good Riker story. Like, it's Riker looking like a creeper several points throughout the episode. It doesn't contribute to our knowledge or understanding of Riker, really. It doesn't add anything to Troy. So, like, I feel like when all is said and done, there's no fans looking back at this episode as being or as containing any information regarding Riker that they hold as important in any way.
No, and honestly, if I think about, like, the few moments of this that I do like in this episode, I'll say, well, number one moment for me is the last goodbye between Archer and T'Pol that we got. You and I both really like that.
Yep, 100%.
And then the final, I don't know, 15 seconds, where it's essentially the montage of all the various Enterprises and the voiceovers from Patrick Stewart and William Shatner. That was actually a very well done sequence that I liked quite a bit, but it just did not fix the episode, which I think is it's just a fundamentally flawed premise.
Yeah, it is. And it, of course, you know, kills a character in a really stupid way. So it just has that lingering effect over the whole series, because this character who's like a fan favorite, you know that when you get to the end, he's coming up to a stupid death. And that,
and you're talking
really
about Shelby, right?
I am 100% talking about Shelby. No, of course, I talk about Trip. And I think it's very telling that how many years later, like, what is this, like, almost, what, 15 years later, fans continue every single year to ask Connor Trinneer about this death.
I know. Like, he must feel bad about that.
Yeah.
Okay, so, Kim, we're both on the same page. These are the Voyages, number five for us. Can I throw to you for your number four?
Yeah, sorry, just before we move on, do you think other people agree that this is the worst one?
Yes, I think other people do agree. And I think it must be kind of a consensus. Well, I don't know, because maybe you'll talk about your number four, and I suspect we align on number four. Mm-hmm. But there must, fans of the series Star Trek Enterprise cannot possibly like this finale, right?
I've never heard anyone say anything really positive at all, come to think of it. I was going to try and be like, couch that as in like, maybe there's something they like, but no, I'm like, no, I don't remember anything whatsoever. So yeah. Okay. So let's move on to number four. My number four, I think it's kind of obvious, is the original series finale, Turnabout Intruder. And I'm guessing that's where you're putting it too.
Yeah, that's my number four as well. I think as we alluded to it. Okay, Cam, I've got one question for you.
Yeah.
Is this episode even canon?
I mean, I guess it is as much as... I mean, it doesn't add anything to the canon of Star Trek, really, except for that. I know that one fact you're going to bring up. Other than that, it doesn't bring up anything that is even necessary to even know. So, but I mean...
Let's get into that one fact, though. The fact is, in the 23rd century, women are not allowed to command starships, Cameron. Like,
apparently.
There's no way I can justify, like, I do many leaps and bounds in my head to justify, you know, Star Trek episodes. In my head, I go back to These Are the Voyages, and I'd like to think that Trip did not actually die in such a horrible way. It's just like the Hollow writer took creative liberties. And so I can imagine Trip had a much better ending at the age of 95 than what we saw there.
Whoever wrote that must have really hated him.
Or else he just was looking for a big action climax to a rather so-so story about a diamond theft. So.
Not that big a climax.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah.
Going out with a whimper, not a bang.
Well, unfortunately, a big bang in Trip's face, which was just even more unfortunate. It still irks me. Remember, like, Trip's laying on the bed of the sick bay, and then he has like this smile on his face, and the next scene is he's dead. We're like, okay.
It's a real Poochie went back to his planet moment.
Yes, Mr. S. But that was Ray, actually. But
that was from Ray. The Simpsons. Ray did the same thing, I'm sure.
But Turnabout Intruder. Look, the fact of the matter is, there's no way in my head that I can justify that the events of this episode actually took place within the Star Trek universe as we know it. You know, like it is a constitutionally flawed premise for an episode to say that we have a woman who is so upset by the idea that she is denied the right to command a starship, that she will seek vengeance and come across as like the worst horrible stereotype that writers in the 1960s would have been perpetuating against women at the time. Like, there's I just cannot accept this as a canon episode. And I'm usually somebody who's very adept at making giant leaps and bounds in my own brain to make everything fit into this.
Well, I mean, I think the other shows that were set before that have completely disproven this entire episode. You have Hernandez on the Columbia in Enterprise. And then, of course, like Georgiou in Discovery. So, yeah, everything that they're stating to be true in Turnabout Intruder has been proven to be completely false in the history of Star Trek. So
then, what do we make of this episode then?
To me, the reason it's my number four is because I think what redeem is not the word I'm going to use, but the thing that makes this episode very like watchable in a way is actually the performance of Sandra Smith playing Captain Kirk. I think she's really, really good in this episode. Like, you have a genuinely really good performance that I actually find interesting to watch.
Cam, I agree with you 100% there. And I would also give props to William Shatner in that, like, he's doing a stereotypical kind of woman's performance in, like, what a man would think a woman acts like in the 1960s.
Like, but very much a, like, 1960s femme fatale kind of idea, yeah.
Yeah, and Shatner, he, just with his body language and the way he does intonations in his voice, it's very purposeful. And I think we have to give props to Shatner for he really throws himself into whatever performance he's given.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he throws himself into doing this. I think he's got to look at the script and realize it's horrible material.
I just think they were so checked out too at this point. Like, everything I've read about the original series, by the end of season three, there was zero hope they were coming back. People were exhausted. They were doing incredibly long weeks because, you know, it was more episodes, I think, even back then. And it was just like, everyone was like, we're done. We are out. We're looking for new work.
Yeah. But essentially, the other reason this is a little bit flawed, like, I agree with you. Like, Dr. Lester, as played by Sandra Smith, she is like this, she is essentially the protagonist of the episode because, of course, Kirk's mind is occupying her body, if I'm doing the math correctly. So Kirk is actually her. So we're spending a lot of our time with her in the final episode of the original series, which is also weird. But the thing is, Shatner gets more screen time than she does, which means that we're actually spending even more time with the antagonist of the episode rather than the characters that we've been following. So it's really actually kind of a messed up like narrative situation if we're looking for any sort of finality from the crew after three seasons.
It's pretty baffling that when you look at the two bookends of the first finale and the last finale aired, they both completely pushed their main crews aside in favor of these weird offshoot stories featuring guest stars.
Yeah. Like, from your perspective, okay, it is a different era in the 1960s where, like, finales weren't really a thing. It's like it would have been any other episode of the week, but it just feels as if there was no effort put into this. Otherwise, you look at Enterprise where we didn't like the finale, but you could tell that they were trying to wrap things up to a certain degree.
Yeah, it has very different issues than These Are the Voyages, this one. Like, this one just feels like a non-event, and it feels like an episode they should have just shoehorned somewhere in the middle of the season if they so desperately wanted to make it. Like, I'm sure there's another episode in season three you could have put at the end. There's not a lot of great episodes in season three, but there's at least some that are good. You know, it just seems weird.
You brought my attention to before I made my way through the series, though, was the Cloudminders. And that is more of a Spock-centric episode, but it is very much in the spirit of TOS. I like that episode. How late in the run of season three did it actually go? I just don't know if they would have had time to like bank that one for a potential finale.
Yeah.
I think that was like more like episode 17 or 18 or like something around there. And I think that would have been too much of a gap.
It's like kind of somewhere in the middle. There is another one, though, that comes like right near the end. Savage Curtain is, of course, out there. But
it's out there.
It's out there. All Our Yesterdays is actually a really good episode. It's a time travel episode. It features Kirk, Spock, and McCoy getting trapped in this kind of alternate dimensions. It's not necessarily one of the all-time great Star Trek episodes, but I would say it's a really good episode and probably among the probably three or four best of season three. And it was aired at episode number 23 and Turnabout Intruder was 24. You swap those two and people remember the finale of this series very differently with an episode that is actually fairly iconic and like fondly remembered.
It just seems so obvious now. You know, but that's how, you know that they really checked out, as you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just don't even think they really cared that much. Like, you really get that sense, like, the lights were going down. People were just like, whatever, see you later. Like, it was not kind of the, you know, you hear all those stories about the final day of shooting, I don't know, like Next Generation or DS9 or whatever. And there's a little bit of like, you know, Iris Stephen Bear giving speeches and things like that. I don't think anything like that was going on the final episode of TOS.
You don't think George Takei and William Shatner were exchanging bro hugs or anything?
I have my doubts.
Okay. I guess my final thought on this, though, is like, you look at an episode like this, I'll put it at number 4, if only because this episode does not ruin the legacy of the original series for me. So that's how I can justify a rather toxic premise for an episode in Star Trek that I still cannot even fathom how it works into the continuity of the universe. I can't even think of this as a canon episode, personally.
Do you think you would feel differently about this one as the finale if you'd never gotten TOS movies?
This was the last adventure we ever got, as opposed to Kirk saying, you know, second star to the right. Is that kind of what you're...
Yeah, like, because so much of what we take from the final moments of Kirk all come from those films, right? Even when you're getting to the great stories of Wrath of Khan. Had, like, Star Trek just ended at season 3 and then we just gone into Next Generation. Like, I think we'd feel very differently as this being a much more of a bitter ending.
I think that's very true. And you and I talked about it last week with regards to how Nemesis wraps up Picard's journey versus how Star Trek Picard has brought Picard through the last 10 hours. And how, no matter our issues with Star Trek Picard, I think we're ultimately much happier with where that character lands at the end of these 10 hours versus where we saw him at the end of, you know, 8 hours of Star Trek movies back in the 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. So I guess, should we move on to number 3?
All right, I'll take number 3. For me, I'd like to say this one sentence to you, Cam. To the journey.
To the journey.
I'm putting Endgame from Star Trek Voyager at my number 3. To the Journey is my favorite moment of this. This is a speech that, of all people, Harry Kim is able to give the inspirational speech of the episode. And it's very meta. He's not just talking about this 7-year journey that they were on, but he was talking about this 7-year journey that our viewers were on here. In that, like, no matter what happens at the end of this episode, look at all the memories, the adventures that we went on, and you can take that away with you. And I think that's actually a very good thing to remember. I think there's a lot of toxic fandom going on right now. You look at Cam, you don't watch Game of Thrones, but you were very much aware of all the response to how that series wrapped up.
Yeah.
I was not a fan of how the series wrapped up, but I ultimately look back on the years and years I spent watching it and taking it all in, where the characters went as things progressed, my anticipation week to week, I'm okay with going on this journey. And I feel the same with Star Trek Voyager, even though I think Endgame is kind of a real so-so finale. It doesn't harm the legacy of Voyager, in my opinion, but it certainly doesn't do it many favors. Well, what's your take on Endgame, Star?
It's trying to do all good things, which is frustrating. It's a little too similar to it. And even Braga and the writers were like, yeah, we were trying to do all good things, which is like, really? Really? That close to that episode? But
I know.
You know, I think it's only like a few years removed. Like, come on, guys. But that said, like, I think it's fine. It's a B-grade level of that. There's good stuff. Alice Kriga is in this episode, of course. You've got the dueling Janeways. I think there is overall enough there to contribute to a good Voyager episode. I just don't know that it's the finale that people wanted. I think people wanted maybe a little more pomp and circumstance when you have Voyager actually arriving home. You know, we get some fireworks. And we get like a 30-minute alternate universe, but
we got the fireworks at the very beginning of the episode.
Yeah,
this is what killed me as the viewer at the time. I remember watching it, and I kept looking at the clock on my VCR, and the minutes were counting down, and they still had not arrived home on Earth, and I was like, what kind of conclusion, what kind of resolution are we going to get? What kind of celebration are we going to get with these characters as they're reaching their loved ones for the first time in 7 years? I was getting anxious watching it, knowing that we only had like 5 minutes left in the episode. And then I finally realized, oh my God, they're ending it with the ship just kind of being greeted by a small fleet of vessels just saying, hey, yeah, welcome to Earth. And I was just like, wow, we don't get even like a small moment of Paris and his father, you know, just giving a bro hug or something like that. You know, like to me, I felt cheated. Was that something you experienced watching Voyager? Not week to week. You did more binge mode though.
Yeah, I did. I did find this finale just frustrating and lacking sort of the weight of a finale. There was bits and pieces I could take from it. You know, there was at least a little bit of a conclusion to the Borg Queen story with Janeway. So I could go, okay. And ultimately Janeway does get them home. But I think maybe there's a bit of a problem in that we see this alternate future. We spend a lot of time in this alternate future setting up what became of all the characters when they got home. And ultimately the tragedy is that Seven didn't make it. And then Chakotay, I don't know, was overcome with emotion or something. I really don't know what happened to Chakotay, but he ended up not making it either.
It was weird.
It was weird.
And Tuvok seemed to be doomed to a horrible existence as well.
Yeah, yeah. But I wonder if they should have made it darker than that, where Jane make it.
Oh, wow.
So like, or like maybe Janeway made it back with like only a small handful of people. And it's her great like regret that she could not save her crew. That's why she's doing this versus like one or two people who passed in mysterious circumstances that we don't really understand. Like it doesn't feel like it pulls us in. Like I think I would buy into it if it was a little more, almost like say like The Visitor, the DS9 episode, not a carbon copy of that, but the sense of like weight to what this character's gone through, where Janeway, like we understand why she does exactly what she does.
I actually think that's a great idea. And I think, I remember the first time I watched this episode, I really felt as if Admiral Janeway was kind of the antagonist more so than the Borg Queen. But rewatching it, she was one of more of an unreliable ally to a certain degree. And so I can appreciate that character even more. I get what you're saying though. And like, it would be more intriguing if her motivation was coming from a darker place rather than trying to fix a little thing here, a little thing there, you know?
And if it was a much darker scenario, we would question a lot more like how stable she was, this character, you know, this future Janeway going back. Like we would be a little less trustworthy of her motives because like, what has this person gone through?
I know. And that said, I'll pick on Brandon Braga just a little bit. yet again, okay, so we have Riker. Brandon Braga brings back fan favorite Riker from the Next Generation era for These Are the Voyages. Another finale that Brandon Braga writes is Endgame, in which he brings back fan favorite TNG era actress Alice Kriga. The villain here. He likes bringing back familiar characters from the TNG era. I'll just say, like, we get it, bro. You wrote for TNG. It's a phenomenal pop culture thing. I don't know. Is it too fan servicey for you? I can wrap my head around it, but I just wonder if he's got, like, a bit of a default to a certain degree.
Well, he did it in All Good Things as well. Did he do it in every finale he wrote?
He did. And by All Good Things, you're thinking about like he's bringing back Tasha Yar, he's bringing back Q, etc.
Yeah. Yeah. Tasha Yar in particular. Yeah.
So, look, the fan service in a finale, I don't mind it. I'll give it more leeway than I would in like an average episode, you know? So I'm just taking notes. But Cam, seriously, Seven and Chakotay, that stuff's just gross. It's like.
It is. But I would love if I'd felt like a real emotional punch when they got home, even if we had like a montage, like what DS9 does, you know, we'll talk about that one a little bit later, but like DS9, you've got a montage tracing back all these characters and their journeys. Like I think giving us that sort of fan service in a Voyager finale as they get home, I think would really mean something and be that nice little punctuation on it for the journey these characters have been on. as opposed to kind of what we get, which is a very Janeway heavy episode. Yeah, you've got, you know, Tom and B'Elanna delivering, and you've got Tuvok doing his own little thing, but it's very, very Janeway and Seven heavy.
Well, dude, we spend the first 40 minutes of this episode in the alternate timeline, which this alternate timeline is something we're supposed to be invested in, but like it gets erased ultimately by the actions of the characters. So it's kind of like, it's just such a weird story heavy premise that they're putting on us here. I just don't think this works on a narrative level, even though I can appreciate moments like Harry giving his speech or Tom and B'Elanna having their daughter, you know, that sort of stuff.
Yep.
But other than that, like what are the big emotional gut punches in this? Like I got more out of the Archer and T'Pol farewell mm-hmm. than I did really emotionally out of anything on Endgame. But I just think that Endgame is a far more watchable, far more serviceable finale than These Are the Voyages.
Yeah. Like there's nothing else that really pops to mind that's that really powerful in there. It's a frustrating finale in some ways. In other ways, it's a totally functional finale. It's like, you know, we've seen over the course of our life.
Just like Android Data, right?
Android Data. Yeah, exactly. But I mean,
totally functional.
You and I have seen so many TV finales over the course of our lives. And, you know, the vast majority aren't really that memorable. And I feel like...
It's hard to stick the landing.
It is. And even if you just kind of, you know, tap the landing okay, you go like, yeah, that was fine. And you don't really remember it that well. You tend to only remember the greats and like the really bad ones. And I think Voyager, because we talk about Star Trek so much, I think we remember Endgame. But I think if I were more of a casual Star Trek fan, this one would fall in the don't really remember it very well kind of mindset.
Yeah. And like how many times have you felt compelled to go back and rewatch it? Like there are other finales that I could just like pop in my DVD and watch it on repeat for a while. But Endgame, I've literally watched it twice, once when it aired and once when we did our review almost 20 years later after it first aired.
Yeah, I think I've just watched it twice as well, which is actually kind of funny because I've definitely watched Turnabout Intruder and These Are the Voyages more. I think I've watched them three times.
Well, yeah, it really speaks to where you think about women being in command of starships, Cam.
Apparently.
Okay. Cam, I'll throw it over to you. What is your number two finale for all of Star Trek?
So for number two, I ended up going somewhat after a lot of soul searching. I went with What You Leave Behind, and this is the DS9 finale, and this one really was tough for me, really, really tough, almost as tough as Turnabout Intruder versus These Are the Voyages, and that, like, in terms of a finale, I don't know that there's one that means more to me than this finale. Like, emotionally, this is the apex of, like, Star Trek finales for me. And DS9 is my second favorite show after the original series. And this one stands out especially because obviously there's no arc over TOS versus there is in DS9. So this really did feel like the final step of the journey. And the fact that it's so fantastic is like, why isn't it number one? And I think it's because there's a few problems that we've touched on in the past, but we'll probably touch on again. But what about you?
Did any series have a more daunting task in front of it, just in terms of wrapping everything up?
No, not really. No, because, you know, you could say, well, Voyager was going on shortly after, but Voyager didn't have the continuity and, like, massive cast of characters that DS9 did.
Not to mention the serialization that was there, that they, it wasn't just like the characters, which you bring up, which is very important, because there's like nine main cast members plus mm-hmm. an additional 24 recurring characters that we all wanted like some resolution to as well.
Yeah.
And I guess we got it a couple episodes before with Tacking Into the Wind and saying goodbye to Gowron, but with regards to the rest of the cast, I just feel it's like this could have been the most difficult thing to do, and you could have forgiven them for so many more flaws that could have emerged from this. But ultimately, you walk away from this, no matter some of the silliness that maybe you and I can get into in a moment, so satisfied. And I was thinking about this a lot. Like, they punctuated a lot of the emotional beats with moments that seem so in character for these people that we went on this long journey with. And it felt real. It felt earned. And I think that's something very difficult to do, in which something feels earned in a series when you're trying to hit people with a certain moment. I'll give you an example here. Mm-hmm. The Quark and Odo goodbye. That yeah. was so in character for both of them, where Quark was trying to get Odo to admit that, you know, he really loved him after all. And Odo, all he could do is just turn his back, and it doesn't matter. Odo does not win. Quark wins that round because Quark looks at the back of Odo and he can just tell. And as he says to Kara, oh, the way he walks away, I know he loves me. I know he loves me. And it's just, those are the kind of moments that they do so well in this. And I also think about this. Was Kira not the centerpiece for like pretty much like all the big emotional punches in this, save for one very important one? But I'm thinking about her farewell with Odo. She's yep. in that moment between Quark and Odo as well. And she's also in that last shot of the finale, which I think is just one of the most astounding shots in all of television, where she wraps her arm around Jake as he's pondering the future of his father. And we get this screen pan back away from the station. And I love the idea that Kira Nerys, of all people, is the emotional center point of the series when it ends.
Yeah, I mean, totally. And she gets two like iconic shots out of this episode, because you obviously, yes, you have that shot at the window, but you also have, you know, Odo in the tux and her, the whole two of them holding hands and kind of parting hands as he goes into Link. Like, it's crazy. And just the sense that, yeah, as you say, I mean, that this really is Kira's journey from this point forward. You get that sense in DS9. But also on top of that, the first time we see DS9 is in the premiere, is Sisko and Jake approaching it. And we see that the father and son approached it, but only the son was left at the end, which is also very powerful.
Well, let's talk about the father-son dynamic as well, because one of the other big, big emotional gut punches for me is the farewell between Sisko and Cassie, where they have another son coming. We, mm-hmm. we do find out, that it is going to be a son based on what we hear from the writers, at least. And he says, look, I know I'm going to be gone for a little bit, but I will be back. There will be this presence that I can provide as well. And I think that was a very powerful moment. It must just kill Jake, especially when you think of an episode like The Visitor, what he's willing to do for his father. And he doesn't get that last moment with Ben, but I can understand it. And I think that moment between Ben and Cassie is just like one of the big tear jerkers of everything that we see here.
Oh, totally. One of the great moments. And just how he says, like, you know, maybe a couple hours, maybe tomorrow, you know, like, it's very haunting. And it does stick with you long after the series is, you know, kind of in the rearview mirror of your watching.
Okay, it's never been in my rearview mirror. It's, you know, that's all I'll say.
But it's it's an enticing mystery, too, because you really do wonder what became of Sisko. But it's not the kind of mystery that they leave dangling that, like, really, like, eats away at you in like a annoying way. Like,
not at all. Yeah, it feels as if it fits in thematically with the series as well. So it's just, and I like using my own imagination to imagine what could happen further on. We got some more answers with regards to the What We Left Behind documentary, mm-hmm. with the animated features there, which I thought were phenomenal. So we still can just kind of guess about what ultimately happens with Ben's future, but everything about this finale, like, it seems as if it was so impossible to pull off, and they do a great job with a lot of things here. I would say a good like 80-90% of it, but maybe there are a couple things that we do want to pick apart. Would you be so bold as to go first here?
Yeah, well, I mean, to me, the big one has always been that the Ducat win payoff feels really shoehorned in, and basically cuts from Sisko to Party being like, hold up, just a second, runs out and jumps into a fire pit with Ducat. And you're like, whoa, like, it takes place over, like, what, 2.5 minutes or something. It's very, very rapid.
Even though, like, Ducat and Wynn are crawling through the fire caves for, it seems, for like 2 weeks.
Like, living off rats.
Yeah. And then Sisko essentially beams in from the runabout and it takes him about like 30 seconds to get there.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay. But it also feels as if like we're watching like, I don't know, like Merlin, like the NBC made for TV.
With Sam Neill?
Yes, yes. Where it's like they're doing like magic spells to like fix things, and then there's like Wynn had her heel turn a long time ago, and then she had yet another heel turn by ultimately saying, "Hey, f off, Dukats. Hey, Cisco, you gotta stop him somehow."
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you know, and then he literally just shoves him into a fire pit in the fire caves, and the last we see of Cisco in the flesh is him essentially skydiving into like a ball of flames. It was just like, it's iconic. I still remember it vividly, but it is a little silly.
It is. I love that you're going to Merlin, the miniseries, because I feel like they're probably more going more for Raiders of the Lost Ark. Which
they
had,
didn't
like,
quite get there.
Which had like Belloc reading from the book and then bursting into flame, which is what happens to Kai Wynn. But sure, I'll go with Merlin. But yeah, it's like they want to go for that kind of epic sort of adventure movie grandeur, but it's just like taking place in 2.5 minutes. They don't have the budget. It looks kind of silly. And ultimately, these two villains that we've been building to this story for quite a long time, you know, over the like tail end of season 7, and it kind of all just culminates in this very quick kind of afterthought of a moment. It's a little frustrating for me.
Yeah, and the other thing is, though, they had planned to have Wynn and Dukat in all of the final episodes. And then I think they realized, oh, we've told their story in about 4 episodes. So they had to put them on ice for a while.
Yeah.
But I think they put them on ice for just a little bit too long. And it just felt very cut short, I guess I could say, in how they wrapped up.
And it's also like we're focused so much on the Dominion War. Like the Dominion War is really what matters and is giving this whole season momentum. Like all the stuff with the magic book, you're like, oh yeah, that. It just doesn't have the weight.
Well, maybe let's talk about the Dominion War stuff here. I think it's kind of, look, we all kind of got a sense of going in, like the Federation can't possibly lose. We're not going to end the series with the Dominion taking over all life as we know it.
Right.
But it's like, what are the costs going to be to the characters? And I think, you know, there's some great moments here. Think about a character like Damar, where he started in season 4, mm-hmm. pretty much giving lines like, Captain, there's a ship off the bow to, you know, Dukat. And now he's essentially turned into a martyr. And yeah. I realized when that scene first happened, it seemed very abrupt to me. Like he just got shot unceremoniously with a phaser and that was that. Going back and watching that moment again, I appreciated just how brutal it was. And it's not romanticizing the way that he went out, even though society on Cardassia is going to romanticize what happened to him from there on out. So it's actually a moment that I appreciate that much more. But I just have to say, sorry, Wei Yun, you're the last clone. Garrick gotcha. That's that.
I love, too, that when the war comes to an end, it isn't this big, like, you know, like Return of the Jedi, Ewoks cheering kind of moment. It's like Martok like drinking blood wine while the other, you know, Sisko and the Admiral are just like, this is nothing to celebrate.
No.
And you're like, wow, like this is not what you expect from a finale to a war in a, you know, sci-fi TV show.
Well, the Jem'Hadar literally started killing, you know, Cardassians on the planets. And I think when they, what was it, like 800 million died just then? You'd have to believe there's going to be collateral damage afterwards. We're talking about like billions of lives.
Yeah, oh, totally. Yeah. Like it really does emphasize the cost of the war, which is something DS9 was so, so good at.
Yeah. Another thing I'll pick apart, it's like, it's more of a production issue, and we've heard the stories recounted, but those flashbacks, I thought those flashbacks were phenomenal, but of course, like, there's no Jadzia there. And
yeah.
It sounded as if there was some sort of agent wrangling. You know, you talk to Terry Farrell, she says she wished it had gone down differently. It's just so unbelievably unfortunate that she's not able to be remembered in that final episode.
Oh, totally. It really is a bummer. And it does stick out that extra bit because you're like, oh man, like that is the most crucial thing that happens to Worf on that show. It really is. And so to remove that is frustrating.
But I'll just say this though, that Vic Fontaine farewell scene, you know, with everybody in the same room for the last time, you know, Worf dropping lines like Minsk, you know, like that to me is just kind of epitomizes why you love that hangout factor with Deep Space Nine. And it works for me so much. I love that moment, even though it's what, as you pointed out, kind of bridges towards the silliness with the fire caves. But either way, you know, there's so much going on here in this finale that works more so than some of the stuff that doesn't work. And I think it was such a difficult task ahead of them that I have to give them so many props for pulling off as much as they did here. This is, you know, for me, when I think about like top episodes of Deep Space Nine, this gets a 10 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, it's rare you would actually include the finale in your top 10 of the series, but I think with DS9 you actually might. So that's really saying something. Although I do have a question for you. Do you think Bashir and Ezri are a couple for the ages?
Not at all. Not in any way. But you know what? I don't know. Most people don't end up with a partner who is a couple for the ages. So I think it's more just realistic, very much like O'Brien and Keiko.
Were they together by the time Voyager got home?
According to the What We Left Behind documentary, I guess so.
Yeah, that's true.
Did I buy it? No, not necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
To me, it felt more like a 6-month sort of deal, you know.
Sure. Yeah. But I guess we should get to number one, which I think everyone obviously knows is All Good Things. This, for me, was more of the intellectual choice. It was very difficult for me to put What You Leave Behind at number two because obviously it has so much more of an emotional connection with me. But ultimately, when I really come down to it and like the art of crafting a finale, paying off all your characters, and telling a great story, I don't think you can really do better than All Good Things. There's a reason this is on the lists of like all-time great TV series finales.
Yeah, and it really is very much a two-hander between Picard and Q, who those actors just have this gravitas to them that can totally sustain all the burden placed upon their shoulders, wrapping up what was essentially the biggest cultural phenomenon at that very moment in time, and it's still, you know, persist to this day. I gotta give props to them. The thing that I will pick apart though is, does this feel like it wraps up the Beverly Crusher story or the Geordi story or the Data story? It feels very much like the writers knew that they were going to be coming up with more adventures in the movie era in just a few months.
I mean, they were definitely going to pay off Beverly in the movies to come.
Oh, for sure, Cam. What was the most memorable thing that Beverly got to do in any of those movies?
She got to carry a phaser rifle in Insurrection.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess like when she interacted with the EMH.
Yeah.
In First Contact, I remember that.
Yeah.
She and Deanna Troi talked about their bodies feeling younger in Insurrection. That's about it. I just, like, she was not done right by that. But, like, getting to see her as the captain of the Pasteur, that was pretty badass, even though it was kind of this alternate timeline. But I could still wrap my head around it. Like, it would be awesome in, like, Star Trek Picard if we got, like, a reference to that, or if Beverly Crusher did show up as the captain of the USS Pasteur as well.
That would be great. The one thing is, like, DS9 really does put a bow on all the characters. That's not what happens in TNG, but it does give you great moments with all of the characters. You know, you look like Professor Data or a lot of the Riker stuff in here. As you said, the Crusher stuff, as her as the Captain of the Pasteur. It's all really fantastic character stuff.
And the thing that people might forget, though, Deep Space Nine was very much an ensemble. Next Gen, not so much. You had kind of three characters that they all liked writing for, which is Data, Riker, and Picard. But beyond that, you know, beyond like Crusher and Geordi getting maybe one or two episodes dedicated to them every season, all we could depend on were like great moments with those characters sprinkled throughout the season. And so with this, they sprinkled fantastic moments with all those characters throughout the episode. And that's what I can appreciate. It really feels as if All Good Things, it represents TNG at its very best. And I think that's why we think of it in such high regard, though.
Yeah, well, it does the high concept sci-fi story incredibly well. Like when you're looking at your all-time TNG episodes, this one's going to be really high on the list because it does what TNG does best incredibly well, like among the best of any of the series or of any of the episodes.
And what is your thought process right now with where we leave off of Q? Because like it wasn't as if Q was meant to go on this character arc, but he kind of comes back full circle with regards to where we started off with him here. And he's such an intriguing antagonist for our characters to deal with. But does it feel like the Q journey has ended? Is there more ground to cover with Q? Or is it kind of best that this is where we leave off with him? With him saying, look, Picard, this trial for humanity, it's never going to end. But for now, I'm just closing the doors.
Yeah, and then just like vanishing into the black. To be honest with you, they probably should have brought Q back again, period. Like that is such an amazing exit. That is your perfect, like, you know, Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade riding into the sunset. Don't come back. Please, God, don't come back. Don't ruin that moment. Oh, you did. Oh, and look, the Q Voyager episodes aren't bad. We talked about those in our Q episode. I'll post a link to that in the show notes. But
Death Wish is actually really good.
Yeah, Death Wish is really good. The Q in the Gray isn't fantastic, and Q
it's the Q continuum fighting with pistols. Was stupid.
And Q2 isn't great either. But John Delancey's great, but just there's like a real grandeur to his exit from TNG that I know there's a lot of expectations that he's going to show up in the series Picard. I almost wish they wouldn't, but maybe it's just too much of a foregone conclusion they're going to. I don't know.
Yeah, you know what? Like, going into Picard, I think you and I kind of thought, you know, it would be great to bring back Q, have that, you know, kind of season one cliffhanger or something. After I get to the end of season one of Picard, I'm okay with Q not coming back. I would actually prefer that they try to carve out their own thing with Picard, because I don't know that they can actually really do him better than what we got with Star Trek The Next Generation. Or is it really an intriguing story that they have to tell that involves Q? Like, I don't think we're getting another tapestry out of Star Trek Picard in season two.
Well, even TNG was hit or miss with Q. Like, there's definitely some episodes in there where you're kind of like, really? I guess.
In Sherwood Forest?
There's that one. There's also the one with the the female Q, the Olivia Diabo.
True Q.
True Q, like, sure.
She's making Riker fall in love with her and playing with puppies. Yeah. That is not a great one.
It's not great. Hiding Q, that's the second one, right? The one in
he gives Riker Q powers and Riker decides to turn Wesley into a man.
Yeah. Like, there's a lot of hit and miss Q episodes, but the fact that they began and ended so perfectly, it's kind of like, let it go, guys, just let it go. It makes me nervous.
I agree with you. So I'm okay where, look, it's weird because the Next Gen film era is very mixed. There was one like really good film, I think another film that's pretty watchable, which is Insurrection.
Yeah.
And then I think Nemesis is pretty so-so. And I think Generations is just kind of bad. I did like the 1 hour that we got to spend with the Enterprise D, which it kind of felt like an episode on the big screen where you have the typical mad scientist and the Romulans making a very brief appearance and there's Klingons. But then anything beyond that, it's just really stupid. So I really think if this was the legacy of Next Generation, this is where we left off with it, I think it would have made that series grow in esteem amongst the general public.
Totally agree. Like, this is just such an incredible finale. And I mean, you can. It's hard to make an argument for it not being number one, really, because just the fact of how genius it is tying together the different timelines, bringing back Tasha Yar, like yeah. It really does feel just like this, you know, high wire act, and they pull it off. And the fact that they did it, by all accounts, really down to the wire, and like having to write it very quickly, is just a testament to, you know, when inspiration hits, it really hits.
So then, Cam, as we think about this, like, what makes a good finale versus like a so-so finale? And I'm not talking just about like bad writing versus good writing, but what marks do you think, generally speaking, writers need to hit?
I think you have to service all of your characters. Now, when I say that, I don't mean they all have to have arcs in the finale, because obviously TNG didn't necessarily do that. But I think you have to walk away feeling like you've got moments with those characters that matter. I think that is a big part of it, like that leave an impact. And that's something that maybe Voyager wasn't 100% on. You know, like maybe if Voyager had delivered those a little bit more, it would have maybe climbed a little bit. I don't know if it's going to, actually, I say that, but I don't think it's going to knock the DS9 one off at number two. But I think it would have improved it a little to just give each of the characters great moments.
Well, and that's just it. Like, if you took the pedal off a little bit of the forward momentum on the story, on say an end game, mm-hmm. and focus more on the characters. That's why I keep going back to Harry's speech where he's talking about to the journey. I mean, that's the moment that's going to stick with me like way more than anything else. So look, they had to wrap up the Dominion War, but the moments that stick with me more than anything else are those buttons that we get to all the characters. And I think the reason that we devote, you know, X number of years to all these respective series is because we're investing these characters. And I think that's what you really need to hit the mark on, is just giving those characters great moments, making us feel satisfied where even if they have a tragic end to them to a certain degree, it feels earned and feels in tune with the universe that's been established and the agreement that you kind of have with the writers going into everything.
Yeah, I agree. And I agree also, like, you don't need to focus so heavily on story and plot. Because when you look at All Good Things, it's not really tying together with any of the story of TNG. It's its own little standalone thing. But it has a grandeur that carries, like, it really does kind of wrap the whole series together without, you know, having this ongoing threads that they all got to tie up and all that. We don't know what happened to Barclay in this episode. You know, like, it doesn't feel like they felt like they had to pay off everything.
Yeah, and maybe it's kind of the episodic finale that TOS always wanted.
Yeah.
So, Cam, maybe we can have a little fun here. Let's think about the three other series that are in Star Trek right now or back in the day. We have the animated series. It also had a finale, the Counterclock Incident. We also have Star Trek Discovery with Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2. And we had Star Trek Picard, which just wrapped up a week ago with, is it Etz in Arcadia Ego? Is that the name of the finale, Cam?
That is it, part two.
Okay, part two. Yeah. So maybe we could like kind of theoretically pretend these are all kind of official series finales. And then if those are the last episodes, and in the case of the animated series, it is, we can just kind of put those, you know, ranked how we will in between the episodes that we just talked about. Does that make sense to you?
That makes sense to me.
Okay, let's kick it off chronological order. Let's go with Counterclock Incidents. Which episodes, which finales would you squeeze this into at this point if you had to put this within the rankings that we've just developed?
This one's actually really easy for me. I think the Counterclock Incident is actually a pretty good finale in the sense it really is kind of a love letter to the fans in the way that actually works for fans, unlike These Are the Voyages.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I would put it probably underneath Endgame, but above Turnabout Intruder, because I do think it also has that issue where it's focused much more on a side character, in this case, Robert April.
Right.
But it does have so many tie-ins to TOS and the stories of TOS that it is kind of that love letter and button and a little bit of fun continuity additions with Robert April. So I think that's where I'd put it.
I agree with you. And I think maybe for listeners, we did not disagree on any of our rankings so far. Just to recap very quickly, though, you and I, we both said number five were These Were the Voyages, number four, Turnabout Intruder, number three, Endgame, number two, What You Leave Behind, and then number one, All Good Things. I agree with you. Counterclock Incident, I would wedge it right between Turnabout Intruder and Endgame for the reasons that you mentioned there. Mm-hmm. Next episode, Star Trek Discovery, say Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2. I would wedge this one actually between Endgame and What You Leave Behind, because I think we get a lot of great emotional buttons between Burnham and Spock. We also get a very satisfying conclusion to the arc of Pike as we know it. And we have some sad goodbyes, like one Admiral Katrina. Why am I blanking on her last name, sir?
Cornwell.
Cornwell, yeah. So, it just works for me because you also wrap up this very convoluted story that was progressing throughout the entirety of season two. But it also makes me excited about what journeys may lay beyond for our characters moving forward, if this was hypothetically the last time we ever saw them.
Yeah, and that final moment when they are taking off into the future and Burnham's leading them, like, what an epic, epic moment. I mean, that is iconic Star Trek Discovery right there. Like, I don't know if Star Trek Discovery has a lot of iconic moments yet, but I feel like that will go down in the books as one.
Yeah. So where are you? Where would you rank them? I put that one in between Endgame and What You Leave Behind, but where are you at with that?
I agree with you 100%. That's where I'd put it as well, right between two and three, yeah.
Okay. Finally, Star Trek Picard season one finale. If this is the last time we ever see a Star Trek Picard episode, this is the hypothetical finale, Cam. This one, I wonder if it's a little too fresh in our mind. We don't have enough space, but let's play this game.
What are you talking about, Tyler? What are you talking about? We've had a whole week.
But I'll throw it to you. I'm going to make you decide. You and I, we've been on the same page so far. I think we might agree, or maybe we might not. I don't know, but I'll throw it to you. Where would you rank this one?
This one's rough because I really did not think this was a very good finale, but it does its character work mostly. I just think the storytelling is pretty poor. I think I would have to put it, though, just by the fact that it's fairly consistent with the series, I think I would have to put it underneath Endgame and above Turnabout Intruder. Like, Turnabout Intruder kind of has some campy humor to it and a good performance, but it's a really lousy finale.
Well, I can't be so bold as to call it a really lousy finale. There are
talking about Turnabout Intruder.
Oh, okay. And if Counterclock Incident was within this ranking, would you put it above or below Counterclock Incident?
Below. I think below. Yeah.
For me, I just have to think about, like, I found Counterclock Incident delightful, but I think about the gravity of moments that we got in the Star Trek Picard finale. And I don't know if all of our regular listeners have necessarily caught up on Picard. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to spoil anything, but Ken, you know the moment that I'm talking about where there is this sense of finality with a character that we've been following for a long time.
Yeah.
And that has so much weight to it that I can forget a lot of the flaws and a lot of stuff that I didn't necessarily like, if only because I get that moment, actually a couple moments out of this. So I have to put it above Counterclock Incident, but below Endgame for me personally.
I think it just comes down to me that I would rather watch Counterclock Incident than this episode.
I can't necessarily disagree with you there, you know, push to shove. But the thing is, I also have to recognize it's only been a couple days, and that moment that I'm alluding to, it really does make me forget about so many of the flaws of the finale otherwise. And I'm actually okay with that because it actually fixes a lot of the problems that I thought were, that have been lingering in my head for nearly two decades at this point.
Right. Well, again, it'll be interesting to look at that finale, season finale, when we get to do our rewatch when the show comes out on Blu-ray. Because I am curious about how that holds up.
Yeah, I think what we want to do, like, we need to take a breather from Star Trek Picard, and then we'll do, like, a season one overview in a couple weeks, mm-hmm. and then when the physical media release, then we'll do our official rewatch and, you know, special feature review.
Yeah.
So I think we'll have, you know, a couple of months where we get to kind of take it all in and figure out what the series ultimately means to us. I was listening to our podcast from last week, and we discussed, you know, whether season one of Discovery works better or if season one of Picard works better. And I was actually thinking about this a lot this week. I found Discovery so much more frustrating to watch in season one, even though I found the supporting characters as a whole more, I was invested in more than the supporting characters from Picard. But I still go back to this. I to this day, I still don't know what season one Discovery was even about. Like, I have no clue what message they were trying to deliver other than, yes, we are Starfleet, which is no message at all. So if push came to shove, I ultimately have to say I would prefer Star Trek Picard season one over Discovery season one, if only because there was a clear message that they were trying to deliver. It was very obvious what the show was all about. And despite some flaws in the series, it gave me enough great moments that I look back fondly that I'll give the slight nod to Picard season one over Discovery season one.
Okay. I wonder how much of this comes down to the fact that, like, I'm much more I'm a bigger TOS fan and you are more of a TNG fan. And Discovery sure. definitely taps a little more into the TOS vibe.
That's not my issue with Discovery.
Yeah.
My issue is Discovery didn't really, in season one, there's no real consistent themes. Mm-hmm. There are no real consistent messages. You could very much tell storytelling-wise, things were happening because the writer said things were happening. It wasn't a lot of organic storytelling. And that's the stuff that bug me. I don't like the storytelling where things just happen. You know, right. What's going on? Well, something's happening. Well, why is it happening? Don't even think about that. Like, that's not the storytelling that I like. I'm much more into character-based journeys in which the character's decisions propel the ultimate outcomes of things. And I think I got more of that with Picard, even though you and I agree that there were some things that did not feel organic at all.
Right.
But I got more of that from Picard than I got out of Discovery, even though, like, we're both on the same page here. I look at the supporting cast of Discovery, and I feel much more attuned to those characters than I would the majority of the supporting cast from Star Trek Picard.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting when we do a revisit down the road, because we'll see if I go up in esteem and you go down, or if we, you know, meet in the middle or what.
Well, that's why I think we need a break from Star Trek Picard. It's been a week. I think we need to think about it. But I would just say, like, in the intervening week, my thoughts have changed a little bit on what we ultimately got out of season one of Picard.
Interesting. Okay. So I think that wraps us up for series finales. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Of course, no videos again this week, but well, we're in the same boat as all of you.
Cam, I suspect you're going to be depressing people for the next 18 months of quarantine if you keep announcing no videos this week.
I think this will be the last week I do that.
Okay.
Okay, you can, of course, find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Vic Fontaine says goodbye, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's Reportn, N as in N game.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.